Hello, and welcome to Driving Change with me, Steve Goldstein. We are all guilty about wanting to hire really smart people for key jobs. Often I hear comments like, "We like to hire the best and the brightest. So happy we hired John, he is so smart. Glad we hired Charlie, he has a really big brain." Let me make it very clear, there's nothing wrong with that. In fact, in my experience, everyone who gets to an important leadership position is pretty smart. They may not be rocket scientists, but they are really smart, and certainly smart enough to do their job well, assuming, of course, they're not running a spacecraft business. IQ is certainly important as a key qualification for a job. But of course, there's another dimension. In my many years of running and advising numerous companies, I believe that EQ, emotional quotient, is really important. In fact, I've come to believe over the last few years that it's much more important than IQ in determining who the best and most successful leaders are. EQ is all about social skills, relating to your employees, communicating effectively, understanding their needs, trying to relate to them as individuals so that you can bring out the best in them as it relates to their jobs and their coworkers. These are often considered soft skills and are much harder to measure. And this has made it more difficult to get leaders to focus on these skills because they really like to pursue things that they have metrics on. Even though the metrics are still in the formational stage, I can assure you that EQ makes all the difference in the world. If you are listening to the show for the first time, thank you for spending time with us. If you're coming back, welcome back, and I really appreciate your continued interest. Make sure to visit my website to learn more about how you can drive change in your organization. I'm going to tell you now two stories that, to me, epitomizes the power of EQ. One story occurred in 1987 and the other 5 years later. But I must say, I think almost every day about the power and value from these stories, and for sure, there have been many, many others. Back in 1987, I was asked by American Express, my employer, to go over to run our business over there. And it was a turnaround situation where the previous leader basically had not done a good job. And I was sitting in my office on the third day, early in the morning, reading my mail, which was not email at the time, and I felt a presence come into the room. And I looked up to find a window washer, a very typical British window washer wearing blue overalls with one suspender down, a newspaper folded up in his overalls, and having a cigarette dangling from his mouth. And I guess because I was startled, I said, "Oh, you must be the window washer." And totally shocked, he said, "Yes." And I said, "My name's Steve. What's your name?" He said, "His name is John." And I could see already that he was really uncomfortable because clearly no one talks to the window washer. Well, after a few minutes of chit-chat, I asked him if he'd like to join me for a cup of coffee. This is 7:30 in the morning, and so we went to the little kitchen area. I made him a cup of coffee and one for myself, and we sat down at my conference table. And he basically started to tell me about my company. He told me about individuals. He told me about business practices. He told me about what was working and not working. Of course, all this was done with what I later found out. He only got to the third grade in school, so he didn't have all the right buzzwords and everything, but he had a tremendous vision and pulse of what was going on in the organization. I was absolutely flabbergasted, and before I knew it, an hour had gone by. I couldn't imagine how much I had actually learned from this window washer. So we made a date to get together in a few more months, and over the course of time, I probably had coffee with him, you know, once every other month. He took me out to the pub to meet his friends, who were also shocked, and, you know, and I got to know them. We invited him to our Christmas party. And I embraced him as just sort of one of the team. Interestingly enough, my leadership team, who were all Brits and who'd gone to the best schools, were absolutely, totally confused by why this crazy American from New York who had just come over, is having coffee and going to the pub with the window washer. And after a few months, they confronted me because they were shocked and asked me why I was doing this crazy stuff. And I said to them that I learned more about the company from John than I did from all of them. And I suggested to them that they, in turn, start meeting with the most junior people in the organization to really find out from their eyes what was going on in the company. And I can tell you that while they were unhappy doing it, after a few months of doing it, they really appreciated the fact that this actually made sense and worked. So that's the story in London. The next one actually was a little more interesting. A few years later, I found that the person who was running our business in France, in Paris, named Peter, was not doing a good job. He did not know how to integrate with the French and was very dictatorial in nature. And over the course of probably a year, I spent a lot of time coaching and counseling him. He always reminded me that he was a grand master of Mensa, which indicates you have one of the highest IQs. I clearly am not a member of Mensa. And his philosophy was he could outthink everybody and out intellect everybody to do his job. And of course, that was not the case. And here we are one night, we're having dinner. He arranged the place. We're having dinner at the restaurant in the Eiffel Tower. And we were the only two people that were not man and woman. It was a very romantic setting and everybody was a couple and it was just me and Peter. And I'm, over the course of dinner, explaining to him that it's not working and he needs to go. And he's not getting it. He is looking at me in total, you know, he just wasn't hearing what I was saying. And out of the spur of the moment, I just said to him, you know, Peter, we know that to do this job, you need to have an IQ of 125. And before I could finish my sentence, he said, oh, then I have to stop doing this job. He says, my IQ is like 189. And I just have to leave. I have to find another job. And it was like, I don't know, I just, an inspirational moment for me that I thought of this. And he basically told me he needed to leave the company and find something else to do. The shocking thing is that for the whole dinner and all the counseling I had done previously, he just did not get the fact that he could out-intellect his way into this job. So clearly, Peter left the company. And I learned a very good lesson, which is, you know, you have to make sure that you're engaging with people and make sure they're hearing your message. Obviously, in this case, for a year, he wasn't hearing it. Even the night that I was about to fire him or trying to fire him, he didn't get it. But the thing that flipped the switch was when I told him about the IQ requirement. Again, you're listening to Driving Change. To learn more about me, Steve Goldstein, and the show, visit me online at stephendgoldstein.com. Now I'd like to give you three tips that can help you improve your EQ. The first is really start to evaluate yourself. Are you cold and aloof? I know I used to be until it was brought to my attention. I just thought that I could sort of muscle my way through everything and not take the time and care to really understand whether people, you know, like a Peter, understood that. And once it was brought to my attention by a coach, I really started to focus on that, and it's made a tremendous difference. A related point is, do you understand what makes each of your leaders tick? Obviously, they come from all different backgrounds. They have different needs and desires. And really understanding what drives them, what makes them tick, will go a long way to helping you lead them more effectively. And the related piece is, once you do that, you really need to work to make them better. Everybody, no matter how good you are, needs coaching, even professional athletes. And so the first part of this recommendation really has to do with evaluation and understanding. The second one, really, on a more fundamental level, is to really know your leaders and employees. What motivates them? Do they collaborate? Are they really leaders? And there's a lot of questions you can ask. There's a lot of observation you can do. And this really goes a long way to seeing whether the group of individuals as individuals can work together effectively as a team. Sometimes I find that a leader will be very good in his unique function, but he finds it difficult to collaborate. And as I'm sure you know, that silo mentality really is very destructive. So the second point is really getting to know your leaders, employees, and importantly, seeing them as they work in cross-functional teams and working across the organization. Third, and probably as if not more important, is think about how you hire people. I ask myself a bunch of questions now. I'm not interested in going through their resume. I can read that. I want to know some really fundamental issues. Number one, is this someone I want to get stuck in a foxhole with? Does this person have my back? Will they figure out how to get me and everybody else on the team out of the foxhole? I know it's a military analogy, but this is really something that really determines sort of the grit of someone and whether they really not only can solve problems intellectually, but whether they can in fact implement them. Which relates to the second one. I ask them to tell me what are some of the toughest problems they faced and how they've solved them. You can tell very quickly by the problems a candidate chooses to discuss the degree to which they're really good at this. If they choose easy problems, especially for a senior person, that to me is a red flag, because I know in all of my experiences, the higher up you go, the problems get worse and bigger and uglier. And so choosing an easy problem either means they didn't deal with them well, or they're just, I don't know what it is, but they're just not the right person for me. Will they collaborate? You know, I tend not to hire people who want to be all-stars. I like people who want to win the World Series. And you do that as a team. So I also ask them to tell me what they do to collaborate. What are their techniques? What are their tools? What do they feel when it works, and what do they feel when it... And the last one that I ask people when I interview them are questions around how do they deal with ambiguity. We're living in a world of gray, and people who need black and white, simplistic answers to questions are really going to struggle in this fast-paced world we live in now. So I use that to really smoke out their ability to deal with ambiguity and make decisions. If you're listening to this podcast, I'm sure you have the smarts to do your job. Try to be more aware of your EQ. Engage with everyone as much as you can. I promise you, you'll see better results, and you will also greatly enjoy the ride. Future episodes of Driving Change will discuss other useful ways to think about driving change and transformation, and will also provide you with actionable tips that you can implement in your company. Thanks for listening, and I hope you see how being more aware of your EQ can make you a much stronger leader. Make sure to visit my website for more information on my show, as well as tons of other leadership info and tools free on my blog at stephendgoldstein.com.